Peter Major is joining us now. I guess I can't really call you an American, Peter, because you're more South African than American. But I'm sure that you have a better grasp on all of this stuff than, I know you have a better grasp on all of this stuff than we do. You were a little bit cautious about Trump winning because of the volatility that it would bring to the world. And as a consequence, the ability of your sector, mining, to make long-term decisions. If you've got a volatile fellow back in the White House, do you still feel the same way?
Look, very much, Alec. And it's not just me. It's some of the Chinese business people we deal with. And I've had the experience of having a good couple hours with a very connected Russian. He's not an oligarch, but he's a businessman. He graduated from Harvard. He got a degree, MBA, Stanford, worked for a Fortune 500 company in America. So he's very international. But the consensus is pretty much just what you said. Everything's unpredictable with Trump. Whereas with Harris and the Democrats, they always think you can reason, you can make a deal, you can kind of plot forward. But Trump looks like he's going to get it. And it's going to be four more years of whatever you think he got now, you might not have this afternoon. And that includes his own staff. You know, there were stories. One of his cabinet members decided he wanted to leave. And he says, I want to make it as easy as possible on you, Donald. You know, you can decide how. You can come up with every story you want. And Donald says, yeah, this is really serious. You know, you can't drop me. You really owe me on this. So the guy says, no, I want to do it correctly. He said that they were walking down the stairs of the plane when they landed. Donald was already waving for the mic. He says, I got a real important announcement to make. And he'd already worked out the story. This guy was leaving. The guy was shocked. So that, to me, sums up. You don't know what's going to happen from the next hour. And that will keep the volatility up. And that's actually good for a lot of fund managers. Certainly good for me because it gives you opportunities. But it's hard to make long-term plans, for sure. It's much harder for people in the country and outside to kind of plan things when you don't know if it's a solid base you're on and you don't know if it could change quickly.
What might be going through Neil Froneman's mind right now? We're going to talk more about Sibanye. They brought a trading update, share price up 10% on the JSE yesterday. Neil really has to be pretty focused on what goes on in the United States because he's got so much of Sibanye is now there. What do you think's going on in his head?
I don't know. Sometimes I wonder that even under a calm Democratic administration. Neil's juggling a lot of balls, and it's hard to say where his focus should be. He's pretty experienced. He's got a pretty good team. Those were a decent set of results, production results and financials that came out for the third quarter. I think they did surprise everybody, me included. But at the end of the day, he's got to look at his operations and look at the environment they're in. He's heavy into precious metals, but mainly platinum group metals. And they came down off a real high, and they're sitting at an okay price, which is their 20-year average in real terms, their 10-year average in real terms. So they're sitting right at the mean. And I hate things sitting at the mean because you don't know which way they're going to go, Alec. So Neil's got to say, gee, do I put more money into the PGMs and gold? Geez, it's so high now. It's too late to start putting money into gold. He's done well getting money from the States and from the European Union. And anytime a mining company can get money from the government, I think they deserve all they can get. They pay a hell of a lot of taxes. They support a lot of jobs, a lot of industry. And yet mining always seems to be at the back of the queue when government is handing out billions of rands of grants to friends and businesses who'll never make it. Or in the States, they hand out billions and tens of billions of dollars for industries in trouble that they decided are imperative. So now we're seeing mining actually getting on the list and getting some money. And it's still tiny, tiny money. It's parking meter change compared to what governments are giving out before. But Neil's been able to get that. And that's a bit of a coup. And that is good. And I hope they get more because mining does so much for all the countries that it's in, and all it gets is bad news, shakedown artists, you owe us, you owe us.
Looking at those numbers that came out yesterday, a major fillip for Sibanye came from South Africa, and particularly the old gold mines. How much longer have they got to go? We often talk about South African gold, and people of our age can remember when this country was the number one gold producer in the world, but it's just fallen all the way down the scale and is not quite irrelevant, but is a long, long way from where it was. How much juice is still in that lemon squeeze?
Very little, Alec. And we are almost irrelevant. We are less than 3% of world gold production now. You know, 3%. And we still can arguably claim we've got half the world's known gold. And what made us great was we focused on it, and we knew it was the word raison d'etat. You know, it was what made South Africa. Okay, diamonds did at the start, but they were volatile. And Oppenheimer wasn't the first to say gold is really where it's at. We've got so much gold in this country, and we've got the means to produce it economically at a profit. And gee, gold went flat for 40 years, 1933 to 1973, and all we did was increase production the whole time. We more than doubled the employment when the gold price was flat. We put everybody out of business. We were like the Chinese in mining. We just perfected, doing the same main business over and over, and it was cost control. We had fantastic cost control. We still had the best paying blue-collar jobs. We had great career paths for everybody, and I mean everybody, even during apartheid, had good career paths on the gold mines. Now we've thrown it away, and I see it on the chrome side. And yeah, we're still the world's biggest chrome producer, about 50%, but our costs are taking us over. So looking at the gold side, it really did well, mainly because of the gold price, but Sibanye didn't benefit very much. I think they got 3% increase in price, whereas the actual gold price was up about 10 or 11 because they've hedged a lot. But those mines are rickety. They're deep, and the cost just knocked me off my seat. Our costs are so high in South Africa because everybody's wanted their cut, especially the government, but the communities and the unions, the suppliers, and you've just had to give in because mining's always been the bad boy. Certainly for the last 30 years here, and you've got everybody against you, institutions against you, so it's really limited. I think if this gold price came off a bit, the majority of Sibanye's gold mines would be closed within 2 years. If gold price stays here, he can probably get another 5 years, but they are deep, huge, overhead, old gold assets.
But you said earlier that South Africa's got 50%. Of the known gold reserves.
Well,
now that seems as if, like, you're sitting on resources. You're sitting on a gold mine, but you're not actually exploiting it. What's the story there, Peter? Is it possible that we could have a change in attitude by the government of national unity and open up that potential treasure box?
We could never get back to where we were because most of our gold mines were very deep, and they did take billions of capital. And the people that would risk that, like Oppenheimer and like Rand Mines and Glencore, those people are gone. And they were risking their own money. And the bankers, the foreigners that were backing those men, they're gone. So you can't find anybody that's going to back someone who wants to put money into a 10 to 14,000 feet deep gold mine that's going to take 8 to 10 years to get to production. I don't think you can find anybody on the planet that wants to go on that. And we don't have them here. And you have to lead by example. When Ernest Oppenheimer was putting every cent he owned into these mines, he was calling in every friend to put in every cent. When Cecil Rhodes was calling every friend he had and using his own money to put it in, that encourages people. You know, when leaders lead from the front, and they're throwing everything they've got in, that encourages you. And then when they deliver on it, you're double encouraged. So we don't have leaders like that here, business leaders that will do that. It is risky. And the world doesn't like that kind of risk. And it doesn't like an industry where everybody's trying to get their 2 cents from it, whereas you've got thousands of pieces of legislation, a falling infrastructure. The environment is just so much different, Alec. Gold could probably go to $3,000, $5,000. Maybe you'd see a couple small shallow mines, something that could supposedly bring production in 2 to 3 years. And we've got enough gold resources here. We could have a few mines like that. But we need a lot more to change, starting with the GNU government, starting with legislation, reduce the amount of legislation. I think the royalties need another look at. There's a plethora of work we have to do to create an environment that would attract money to do that.
Yeah. Gwede Mantashe is not the most popular person in mining, and you can understand why. But interestingly enough, Cyril Ramaphosa has a history with Pan-African Resources, and I see yesterday we had news from Pan-African Resources that it's spending R1 billion buying an Australian gold mine. Now, doesn't that tell you something?
It does. It says Quibus wants to diversify his risk. He's good at gold mining. He's good at dump retreatment. But you don't want it all in one country. There's 210 countries on the planet, and you're pretty good at that particular commodity. But to have it all in one country, whereas this is still a very populist government. Populist means it says what the people want to hear, or they say what they think the people want to hear, just like we're seeing with the Trump campaign. Very populist in the States now, and that's what appeals to people. So do you want to put all your assets in a government here that they may say more radical things all the time just to try and get more votes, and you're going to be the Wally in the room? You know, you're going to be, you always need a demon when you're trying to rally the troops. And boy, gold mines have been the demon here for decades and decades, and they're too good to not use. So it looks like a great move what Quibus has done. It's a great property. It's in a good area. Looks like he paid a fair price, though. He didn't get it cheap. You know, when you're buying gold properties at the highest gold price man's ever seen, you're not going to get anything cheap. But it has a lot of upside as far as increase in production, and that's what he's got to do. He's got to get a lot more production and a lot more resources out of that area. You know, they like bragging all the kilometers of area that go with it that haven't been explored. Well, there just better be a lot more gold there. But it's prudent diversification.
Peter Major is the Director of Mining for Modern Corporate Solutions. As always, a privilege to have his wisdom and insight on our program.